Mini episode 431 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 431. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris with you, and today we have a very outstanding segment, a good friend of the program, fellow FDH Lounge dignitary, and the managing editor over at that NBA lottery pick, Ben Chu, joining us. We're doing this now for the second consecutive year. We've been doing for a couple of seasons now the annual FDH Lounge top players in the NBA list. We also do them for MLB, NFL, and NHL around this time of year. But last year we started to make show segments out of these lists, getting an evaluation from our experts in the different areas, and for the second consecutive year, we're going to break down the FDH Lounge list with Ben Chu. You can check out the list at the same place that you can check out the show, the FDH Lounge Multimedia Magazine, the fdhlounge.blogspot.com. We have it posted there presently. Ben has had about 24 hours to look over the list, go through it, give us his thoughts, and we'll be getting the breakdown from him, what he thinks. We'll be going 1 through 30 on the list and taking a look at the guys who dropped out from last year. So without any further ado, good friend and the proprietor of that great NBA site, that NBALotteryPick.com. They also have a new podcast that you can check out there as well, the Lottery Pick Problems podcast. You can check that out. Ben Chu joining us from the West Coast. Ben, how are you today in Portland, my friend? How's it going?
I'm doing good, man. Just trying to... We're cutting it close, I like to say, in the business because the Miami Heat availability just finished up. So just, just trying to get all these LeBron quotes up in order. So how's your day, Ben?
Oh, it's going great. I've been looking forward to doing this segment and sort of preparing mentally in my head for what you might say about a couple of these different players and preparing for, I'm sure, what will be an excellent conversation. Let's start it as we did last year by taking a look at the guys who dropped off the list. And I will give the number not only for where players are on the list when we get to that point, but where they were last year. These are the guys that missed the cut in the top 30 this year and have dropped off of it. Paul Pierce at 17, our biggest drop out of any of the guys. He's not in the top 30 this year. David Lee, 22. Zach Randolph, 25. Darren Williams, 27. Marc Gasol, 28. Rudy Gay, 30. By and large, it does tend to be guys in the mid to high 20s who drop off the next year because, by definition, they're the guys who sort of just barely made it in the first place. But were there any real surprises among any of those names? I know that from talking to a couple of people off here, a little bit of surprise perhaps on Marc Gasol. But, you know, if I would have kept going past 30, he probably wouldn't have been too far off of that. So it's a little bit misleading to say he's 28 and he drops off the next year because it's not too far to drop off. Same thing for Rudy Gay. Any real surprises on your part on any of those guys?
I mean, honestly, Rick, I don't really see anyone that's, you know, ultimately too crazy on this. You could make an argument for Randolph and Gasol getting back into the list relatively by next season. But Memphis, I think a lot of us overall thought was going to take that big step. And this year they didn't really, you know, they had that tough first-round series with OKC, and then it just, you know, it didn't really work out for them going into the thing. But besides that, I don't really see any issue with anyone that you left off this list.
I didn't really think so on those guys. We've got a little bit of a different way that this went from last year as far as the third tier of guys. Got guys bunched in from 15 to 30 all on the same tier. So we're going to spend the most amount of time, I think, talking about the third tier. The second tier goes from 3 to 14, and spoiler alert, 1 and 2 on the top tier. I think everybody pretty much knows who those guys are. But on the third tier, counting our way backwards, I'll give you these guys, and then we'll break down any of the specifics afterwards, any of the thoughts that you have on them. At number 30, Rajon Rondo, falling ever so slightly from 29 the year before, 29 this year. Klay Thompson, not on the list last year. Brooke Lopez, 28, not on the list last year. Bradley Beal, 27, not on the list last year. 26, Tim Duncan, he was 20 last year. 25, Dwight Howard, a precipitous drop from 12 the previous year. 24, DeMarcus Cousins, he was 26 the previous year. Kyrie Irving, another drop, 23, he was 15 the year before. Chris Bosh at 22, down from 19. Damian Lillard, 21, up from 24. Dirk Nowitzki, 20, he was 18th the year before, so pretty close. DeMar DeRozan, another fast riser. He is 19 and not on the list the previous year. Al Jefferson, who had been on the list in some years past, he is number 18 this year, but had not been on the list the previous year. John Wall, 17. He was 23 the year before. Tony Parker, 16, down ever so slightly from 14th. And Antonio Davis, 15th. And again, not on the list the previous year. A very big jump for him. So you're looking at, again, some pretty young players there that are making the list for the first time. And again, the criteria for this is generally, if you are starting a team today going into a new season, and so in the case of Brooke Lopez, again, his health might not be 100% yet, coming back from that leg injury last year, et cetera. So there are going to be some issues on some of these guys. But if you are starting an 82-game campaign at the present time, so although, again, FDH affiliated with FantasyDraftKelp.com, of course, this is not just a fantasy list. This is who you would take overall. So it's taking into account some things that can't be quantified necessarily statistically. So that is slightly more than half of our list right there on the third tier. Anybody that you were surprised about, Ben, thought should have been higher, thought should have been lower, et cetera?
I mean, a couple guys that I sort of pegged to be maybe a little bit higher. I thought DeMarcus Cousins had a much better season than people gave him credit for. But mm-hmm. I can see why you stuck him in at 24. Overall, another guy I was literally surprised that DeMar DeRozan was listed 19, because I think a lot of people, especially in even Toronto fans, really thought that Kyle Lowry was a guy that was driving that team late in the season. And I think, you know, he's one of those guys that has the possibility to be on the top 30 with next season. But besides that, nothing really too surprising overall. I know Anthony Davis, but I think, you know, he probably could have been in the second tier just considering how well he played at the end of the season. And overall, it just feels that he thinks, you know, in my personal opinion, he's probably one of the very few guys that I would want to start a team around currently in the NBA.
Definitely, yes. And Unibrow certainly getting it done. When you talk about a guy who had been mentioned when he came out as having the upside of a Hakeem Olajuwon by some people, not least of which FDH Director of Research Nate Noy, he finally looked to be starting to live up to it this past year. Interesting as well that we hear that about Joel Embiid, who is coming out in the draft this year. A little bit different in that Embiid projects as more of a pure center versus Anthony Davis playing the four by and large, but still, that kind of skill set starting to be realized there by Anthony Davis in this breakthrough year that he had for New Orleans.
Right, and especially during his time in Kentucky, we all knew he was a great player overall and could stretch the floor, but with his ability now to hit mid-range shots and the possibility that he can even go out and possibly be a stretch four to hit those corner threes, it's going to be pretty tough for the Pelicans and a lot of people going forward to figure out what is his goal. But he's just an absolute monster, and I think a lot of us thought he'd be this good coming out of Kentucky, but I don't think anyone thought we'd see this sort of offensive game this early in his career.
Yeah, it's really kind of scary because he was kind of raw at Kentucky, and there were a lot of times when really the best you would get out of him was kind of like the putbacks, and you were having to project a lot of this stuff. Everyone thought that the offense was going to come at some point. Maybe it's a little bit like the doubles hitter in baseball where people are saying those are going to turn into home runs. It's maybe not always as linear a path in basketball, but it really has happened. I mean, the proverbial home runs were really coming pretty fast and pretty often this past season because Davis, again, just to get to the top of the third tier here, when he was not on the list the previous year, that kind of says it all about the breakthrough campaign that he had, Ben.
Yeah, and the way that the Pelicans are built right now and then going forward, it's going to be very interesting in terms of what their draft strategy is going to be. But they still have a very young team, and they got a lot of young pieces. The only issue for them is if they were in the Eastern Conference, they'd have a shot to make it to the playoffs. But right now in the West, with everything stacked as it is, I just don't see this Pelicans team, the issue for me with them is that I don't know what they're trying to essentially be as an offensive first team or a defensive first team. They're still trying to feel it out, but they have the pieces. They could possibly be a sleeper team to try and get into that seventh or eighth seed in the upcoming season.
That's a great question, but as far as what they're going to do for next year, is it fair to say that they were something of a disappointment with Anthony Davis having this kind of a breakthrough this past year? The fact that really at no point later on in the season did they seem to be a significant contender for a playoff spot there. Should that have been expected from them based purely on the kind of breakthrough that Davis had? I mean, obviously the Western Conference, we've talked about it ad nauseum, so much deeper and more brutal than the East, but seems like they really wasted an opportunity with this season where Davis took his game to just a whole new stratosphere.
Brian, I think you can make that argument, and I think that's a very fair argument. But I think the issue with them is that they essentially felt that, in the beginning of the season, in the first 30 or so among games, they looked like a team that was very competitive, could compete for that last playoff spot. And then nearing the end of the year, Davis had his injury troubles. Holiday had his injury troubles. Eric Gordon was also an injury issue at periods of time during the year. It really felt like a lot of their key guys got injured, and then you can also note Ryan Anderson was out for that extended period of time as well. So they never really had a full, healthy roster for the entire season. But you also have to question is that they have a really good young team, and you also have to question if Monty Williams is going to be their coach that much longer. And ultimately, I think the real question for the Pelicans is that they have to try and figure out what they want to be right now. They still are crafting that team, even though they made some big acquisitions in the prior offseason. They still haven't fully gone up to 100% in terms of their team building yet.
Great point. We don't know exactly what they're going to look like as they're going forward, what pieces are going to be kept in place, and which ones are going to be swapped out for other parts coming in. And again, it does lead you to think when you're rattling off all the injuries there that with Davis having another year under his belt, he should crack the second tier next year and probably take the team with him into the playoffs. I certainly think that's going to be something to look forward to the next season. The second tier, as we go from 3 through 14, is littered with, again, a number of NBA championships, Hall of Fame careers, some potential Hall of Fame careers in the making. I don't think, if I look up and down this list here, I see anybody who at the given point in time looks terribly unlikely to be in the Hall of Fame. So we really are getting to sort of the cream of the crop part of the bell curve here. We start off, and again, some of these guys, because of injuries, because of where they are at this point in their career, are a little bit hard to slot. And I think the first two guys, as we work our way up the list, really exemplify that. At number 14, down from number 6 a year ago, Derrick Rose. Tough guy to slot, second big knee injury, and you have to wonder what he's going to look like next year. At number 13, Kobe Bryant, down from number 8 a year ago. Again, somebody who suffered another injury and who is already dealing with some potential downside of his career issues, not least of which because of age. So those two guys really kind of tough to slot. From there, a breakthrough guy at number 12, again, Paul George. He was on a tier below this last year at number 21. Number 11, LaMarcus Aldridge, pretty steady from a year ago where he was number 13. Ditto at number 10, Russell Westbrook is just up a spot from number 11 a year ago. Number 9, Dwayne Wade, another guy who's pretty tough to slot. He was third a year ago, starting to show that kind of age in the San Antonio series once again. He had been bubble-wrapped through the regular season and really kind of had some vintage performances in the Eastern Conference playoffs. Like Rose and Bryant before him on the list, a very difficult guy to slot. Number 8, Carmelo Anthony, down from number 4 a year ago, a guy who continues to be a consummate scorer, if not winner. Number 7, James Harden, down slightly from number 5 a year ago, mostly on the strength of the guys in front of him. That would be the reason that he kind of dropped, because we had some guys who were really emerging who were in front of him. Number 6, Blake Griffin, one of our bigger jumps on the list, up from number 16 a year ago, putting it together a little bit more strongly than he had previously. Number 5, Stephen Curry, up from number 10 last year. Number 4, Chris Paul, up from number 7. And number 3, Kevin Love, who had some injuries himself a year ago, up from number 9, taking a strong step forward in his career. it is, again, very, very difficult to slot these guys. I almost think you could kind of take the names, put them in a bag, shrink them, get it from 3 through 14, and they have a decent chance of coming out with a respectable version of a list. This version, of course, had a little bit more thought and analysis that went into it. But, Ben, I'm sure you have some agreements and disagreements on this very consequential part of the list.
Right. Well, why don't we go with the disagreement first? That's probably the easier thing to do. I think Derrick Rose is a second-tier player right now, but I wouldn't put him over Tony Parker at this period of time in their careers. Rose had those two or three great years in Chicago, but right now we don't know what we'll get out of Derrick Rose moving forward. And I would, if you were to put, if you were to compare Rose and Parker's career at this point, I just can't fathom having Parker below him at this current stage of the game unless Rose comes back healthy and he continues to do what he does. Everything else regarding the list seemingly, I would say, would be okay. I was a little surprised Kevin Love was number three, but considering right now the absolute boondoggle that Minnesota has to deal with right now and pretty much everyone in regards to the Kevin Love sweepstakes, allegedly, if I remember, there was a story that was put out, I believe it was RealGM.com, said that over 22 different other teams in the NBA placed trade calls to Minnesota about Love. So that doesn't really shock me too much. The real question, I think, in this second tier of the list is that a lot of guys on this list, it's going off of prior performances and trying to build upon them. And I think a lot of guys like Wade and Derrick Rose and Kobe Bryant are on this part of the list because they've had previous success. But right now, I don't think many people would take any of those guys to start a team with at this period of the game.
That's a very interesting point. And for somebody like Dwayne Wade, like I said, I found him to be very hard to slot. And you look at what he can do on the nights when he's on. And again, it's hard to, at this stage of the game, take away from the fact, put it in a vacuum and say, well, he's on the floor with LeBron James, but we won't try to take that into account as far as how teams are guarding him or whatever. Clearly, you get a lot greater opportunity for the spot that he's in, and even to a certain extent playing with Chris Bosh on that team. But for somebody like Wade, you feel that him being a second-tier guy and being right in the middle of it is based a lot on past perception? Because I've shown in the Eastern Conference Finals and on the nights when he played in the regular season where his minutes were light, that he can still be one of the very best players in the world. But how do you see it? And again, fall objectivity here. I'm not a Dwayne Wade guy at all personally when I say that. So how do you view him as far as what he can still bring you on a given night versus how teams would look at him as far as starting a team from scratch? Because that to me is one of the more fascinating questions out of anybody on the list.
Well, I think overall, I think we all know that Dwayne Wade's a winner. He's done great things so far in his NBA career, and I don't think there are many current, if this was a list based on current shooting guards who do want to start a team, you would pretty much put him in the top three, no question about it. But I think overall, since we are judging this in a huge macrocosm sort of view of the entire league, I just don't think he's a guy that I would want to start a team around because he is getting old, and at least being prisoner of the moment, he has not performed in the 2014 NBA Finals against San Antonio. Now, on one side, that's probably because San Antonio is one of the better defensive teams in the league, but I think also Wade had to rely a little bit on LeBron in the last couple of years, and because of it, of his health and his deteriorating body over his career, it's going to be very interesting to see what he's going to do, because there's arguments that you could probably make that he should just retire at this point, because at portions of Game 2 and Game 3, he looks non-existent, not even in the building.
That's a very good point, and you can take into account a lot of times, too, like the way that it is with NFL players and the whole thought about what's life going to be like after football. And that might sound a little bit dramatic to say about Dwayne Wade, but again, for somebody with knees like his, he keeps playing a number of more years. Could he be looking at knee replacement maybe in his 50s? I know for an NFL player like Robert Smith, for as much punishment as running backs take, that was a factor for him in walking away when he still could and when he still had some juice left in the rind, so to speak. So for somebody like Dwayne Wade, when you say that he should maybe think about stepping away and you seem to mention it in the sense almost of professional pride and of wanting to be remembered as the Dwayne Wade at his best. I look at it from a practical physical point of view as well, too, of the punishment on his knees. Again, for a guy who was in the 2003 NBA draft, he's not a real old man by NBA standards. Let's get it right and say he's prematurely old with the knees here. He's a guy who's older than his chronological age as far as what the game has done to him and taken from him. But do you get the sense that thinking about quality of life after basketball would be a very large consideration for him as well?
I mean, I think there would be, because he is a very prideful type of individual, at least in the times that I've heard people speak about him. And the one time that I ran into him when covering the Cavaliers, it felt that he has a lot of pride, but he also knows he has a couple of young sons and he has a beautiful wife, Gabrielle Union. So you also have to factor in the fact, like, he is pretty much done what he has wanted to do in his career. He's been a multifaceted all-star caliber player who has won 3 championships. And it really boils down to, I think, personal pride at that point, because you can't really – he's going to the Hall of Fame. There's no joke about that. It just seems to me that the only reason why he would stay on is to improve his legacy. And at this point, I don't think he can improve his legacy.
I think that's absolutely true. I mean, his legacy pretty much is where it is. He's somebody who's going to go down as a Hall of Famer, a first ballot Hall of Famer, somebody who in all likelihood is going to be considered among the top 20 to 25 players of all time in the NBA. And there's probably nothing that happens from here on in that moves him up or down that list, I would say. I have an additional question for you about the top of the second tier. And I have to say, just as an aside, it's a little bit nice in doing the NBA list, and I think to a certain extent we do the NHL list with Russ Cohen. These ones are a little bit more straightforward. Baseball's tough to do because we're doing it mid-season, and it's hard to kind of capture what you think would happen over the start of a new 162-game season. The NFL, there's so many positions involved. It really is kind of apples and oranges when you're narrowing it down to the top 32 players in the league. And we do 32 for the NFL because these are all predicated on an average of one athlete per team in the given sport. That's just how we've chosen to do this. The NBA and the NHL ones, I think, a lot more straightforward, a lot less controversy as far as going through these. So it gives us the chance to breathe and to kind of examine it a little bit more. You mentioned a little bit of kind of surprise, mild surprise, I think you would probably say, at Kevin Love being number 3 at the top of the second tier. And I will grant you that, because I myself was kind of surprised when I finalized the list. But it was a thing of, like, questioning who's it going to be, right? Yeah, it was him. I could have made a case for Chris Paul in my mind. I didn't think I could quite make a case for Stephon Curry yet, particularly with Golden State not making it out of the first round of the playoffs. So as you look at here now, you could make a Kevin Love argument and say he didn't even make the playoffs, but his surrounding cast in Minnesota versus what Curry had in Golden State, I think, was a lot better. So I didn't hold it against Love, the fact that Minnesota didn't have collective success. Who are some other candidates in your mind? Because I think you could probably talk to a number of people and get a number of different opinions on who would be 3 and maybe 4 on this list.
Right. I mean, and there are a lot of arguments you could make. Paul George was definitely up there when Indiana was rolling. But due to their swan song in the Eastern Conference houses here, it's really tough to say Paul George should belong in the top 5. I mean, you could make an argument for Carmelo Anthony because currently he is listed at 8. You could make an argument that he should be a top 5 player because despite, if we're going to use the Kevin Love didn't make the playoffs argument as a possible argument, well, Carmelo didn't make the playoffs either, but he statistically had a better season than Kevin Love overall in terms of points scored. And then, you know, the rebounding margins were relatively close. I think it was like a 2 difference, I think, in terms of Love having more rebounds than Melo overall, but in terms of that tier on the list from 3 to 10, it's pretty much, you know, it's a lot of guys who are interchangeable, and no one has really sort of grabbed that mantle yet. And just judging at this period of time and using the criteria of guys you'd want to build your team around, I think Kevin Love would just be the top because he can just do so much for your team overall in terms of rebounding, low post scoring, and being able to hit a 3-pointer every once in a while.
I really agree with that, and that's why the only scenario that I would entertain as a Cavs fan, aside from the Cavs taking Andrew Wiggins, which I hope they do in the draft later this month, would be to take to trade the pick with Minnesota if Kevin Love can be signed to an extension. He gave a fairly non-committal comment on that a couple of days ago, not exactly pouring cold water on the notion. And again, of course, he is good friends and professional commercial buddies with Kyrie Irving, so that's what kind of keeps that fantasy alive. But yeah, the Cavs, the Celtics, many other franchises lined up to be suitors, especially in the event that he can be signed to an extension, which is not at all certain at this point in time, as he is a season away from complete unrestricted free agency. The thing about the NBA list, I talked about it before, all the advantages of it versus the other sports, the fact that it's more straightforward, you get a chance to kind of let it breathe in the conversation and really kind of get into the nuances of it. The disadvantage is that it is the most anticlimactic top tier of any of the major professional sports right now. You could say that maybe with baseball to a certain extent, in that, spoiler alert, you know that Miguel Cabrera, Mike Trout, and Clayton Kershaw are going to be up there, but you could kind of argue the order of those guys. I don't think, as much as I would like to personally, for reasons of admittedly spite on my part, I would like to change the order of the top two, but I cannot. The top tier on the list, as it was last year, the same order, number two, Kevin Durant, number one, LeBron James. And again, I don't think there's a whole lot to say about that at this point in time, Ben, because it just seems very self-evident that that's the way it is, and you draw a line underneath those two guys.
Right. And it's not often, especially on a list like this, when you can say that the MVP of the league was number two. But again, this has been the career arc of Kevin Durant's career, starting in Seattle when he was taken with the second overall pick. And it just seems that they were about to turn the corner, and then they sort of ran into issues against the Clippers and then issues with San Antonio. For Durant, I think he has, I wouldn't like to say peaked yet, but I think you can start to make the argument that Durant has gone to the level of upper echelon stardom, but I don't think he's going to get that much better in the next couple of years. I think the real question is going to be going forward is that, does he want to stay in Oklahoma City past the end of his contract extension? Should he be Russell Westbrook's essential sidekick at this period of time to try and make that situation work? And there's just a bunch of auxiliary factors we can go into, but Durant being number two should be not shocking anyone, because they haven't won an NBA championship yet. And it's pretty much plain and simple that right now it's LeBron. Couple of rings to Durant's none.
Let's talk about MVP for a second there, because, again, I find myself taking issue a lot of seasons with the way that it goes for MVP. You know, there's at least one or two years previously where I would have put Durant over LeBron as MVP. But this past year, and again, it almost seems like there's a decision out there that it's somebody's time and that Durant's been knocking on the door. And I'm not taking anything away from the season he had, because it was phenomenal. But we go back to what we said about Dwayne Wade a second ago here. LeBron, as we've seen in this year's NBA Finals, is at a stretch in his career where he's not getting the level of support from the other members of the Big Three. It seems a curious year, does it not, for Kevin Durant to have leapfrogged him, because arguably LeBron had to pull more of a share of the load in Miami than at any point since he's been there.
Right, and I think the argument for LeBron winning the MVP this year was a valid one, because overall that Miami team really needed him to get to that number two seed in the East. Now, I think the reason why LeBron got knocked off this season were pretty self-explanatory. One, LeBron has won the MVP for a couple of years running past that, so I think there's a lot of voter, you know, withdrawal of trying to re-vote LeBron for another MVP award. And I think also the fact is that due to Indiana's rise in the beginning of the season, Miami wasn't really seen as the best team in the East. And that wasn't really going on until Indiana faltered near the late and then going into the playoffs. But it seems to me at this year, and if you wanted to pick, I don't think there's any argument you can make that you wouldn't want to take LeBron James as the guy you'd want to build your team around or is the best player in the NBA. I don't think there is much. Durant is still neck and neck with him in that respect. But the real question for Durant is that Durant has to eventually win NBA Finals. And at this point, it's a championship argument in determination who's the best player in the NBA.
Well, that's a great point you make as far as Miami being the number two seed in the Eastern Conference and trailing Indiana for just about the entire season, even with Indiana's troubles down the stretch here And this is, of course, a regular season award, the NBA MVP, and that LeBron suffered for that. The last question I want to pose to you is this. In terms of Durant, had he won the championship this year, or rather Oklahoma City won it, I was prepared under those circumstances, combined with the MVP, I would have put Durant number one on the list, notwithstanding, again, the fact that LeBron has had to do it with less help from his other team, Heat teammates, than any time since his run there. I still would have put Durant number one, and I would have said the torch has been passed had they won the title. Would that have been enough for you, or do you think LeBron still would have had a claim based on the overall body of work as being the number one guy on this list?
I think you can make the argument, but I don't think it would be a really good argument, because I think a lot of people have deduced over the last couple of seasons that Durant is the best all-around player in the NBA. And but the only difference is that LeBron is a more dominant player when it comes to crunch time and when it comes to winning time, as Ahmad Rashad would say from the ESPN 30 on 30. It's very simple in the NBA, especially when you're trying to build top, premier lists. You have to factor in championships, and the huge bugaboo for Durant is he's been number two. He's going to still be classified as number two until he eventually gets that ring. And at this point, it's going to be a question, because Oklahoma City, unless they get drastically better in the offseason, they're not favored, in my opinion, to make it to the NBA Finals. So it's going to be interesting. The next couple of years are really going to decide what we think of Kevin Durant in the future. And that's also not to say that LeBron James is that dramatically better of a player than a lot of these other guys on the list, considering during his run from his years in Cleveland to Miami, he's only won two championships. I think if we want to build a list based on champions, you got to look more towards Tony Parker, Tim Duncan, Ginobili, Kobe Bryant, as guys that have won multiple championships that got it done during their period of time.
That's definitely true. And it's very interesting as we look at the top tier here, what LeBron James and Kevin Durant have in common as they're looking at the next couple of seasons here. Again, the guys you mentioned, they're never going to be on a list like this at the very top. Duncan certainly was in his prime. We weren't doing the list this far back, but he would have been a top five guy, to be sure, just about all of the years during his prime. But since then, San Antonio has continued to be one of the dominant forces in the league, sort of against all odds when you look at how teams are generally constructed here. Both LeBron at number one and Durant at number two are going to be confronting this San Antonio juggernaut over the next couple of seasons as they're moving into the what might be the Kawhi Leonard / Patty Mills era of things here. And again, it's a little bit more important in terms of resume and in terms of ever becoming the number one guy in the league for Durant to surmount them and get out of the Western Conference. He is still potentially looking at LeBron being in the NBA Finals, particularly where he ends up physically the next couple of years as far as the team that he's playing for. But both of these guys, one and two on the list, at the end of the day, overshadowed by San Antonio and what they've been able to do collectively. So I don't know if it necessarily heralds the start of a new paradigm in the league. There's a lot of teams out there that don't have megastars that would like to think so. But it definitely is challenging us as far as the way that we look at things in the league, like we haven't been since Detroit got it done in 2004, because and prior to that, probably Detroit of 89 and 90, because it's just typically not how things are done in the league. Typically, if you have one of the top two players in the league, you should have an outstanding chance of winning a championship. Oklahoma City and Miami coming, of course, very close here. But what San Antonio did sort of, it makes it a little bit more interesting to look at the list this year, because it's a thing where it's like, okay, not necessarily so. Maybe we're coming into an era where you can partner together some really excellent players, an all-time great coach, and have a chance of knocking off the elite of the elite players.
Right, and I think at this time, you have to look at a general term, is that the San Antonio Spurs is just this era's lengthy dynasty, in that a lot of good players and a lot of good teams are going to get left out of the conversation in the long run about how great they are. And at this point, in dealing with just the top five by this period of time, it's very likely, due to movement and changes around, Carmelo could jump up there, Chris Paul could jump up there, Curry could jump up there. It's at this point a complete just unknown what this list will look like next year, because of player movement, team movement, a lot of other stuff. that's just going to be completely different. Just because at this point, you could make an argument next year, Carmelo goes to a team and he wins a title, he could be the second best player in the league and eventually unseat Durant. So it's going to be an interesting list, I would like to say, next year.
It really could be. We've got what could be the biggest offseason of substantial movement, of consequential movement since the infamous summer of 2010. We've got to see how all of this plays out and how that will affect the shaping of next year's list. I have a feeling that next year is going to be different from this one in any number of ways. But that always does seem to be the case when you look at this. Of course, there will be guys who will drop off. There will be guys who will be added, who will make jumps and falls. Unfortunately, Kyrie Irving of my beloved Cleveland Cavaliers, one of the players making a big fall down the list this year. And again, could be poised for a rebound next year based on circumstances, who the Cavs draft, who the Cavs retain as a head coach, et cetera, et cetera. That's the beauty of this, is taking a snapshot list every summer, seeing where things end up, and trying to forecast, as we have here, a little bit of where things are going for the future. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Ben. I know there's a lot of great things happening at that NBALotteryPick.com and the new podcast there as well. So keep up the good work there, my friend, and thank you so much for joining us today.
All right, Rick. I appreciate it, as always.
Excellent. Great to have our colleague from the 21st Century Media Alliance, Ben Chu, on with us today. Thank you all for tuning in, everybody, to mini episode number 431 of the FDH Lounge.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.